This is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, June 27, 2005. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. The Supreme Court issues their final decisions for this session, and newspaper workers in Oaxaca City remain trapped inside of their building. These stories and more after these headlines.
I'm Leanne Caldwell, and these are the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. In numerous Supreme Court rulings today, one decision ruled that an appeals court should not have reopened a death penalty case for a Tennessee man. The majority ruling said the appeals court infringed on the state's rights to open the case, which has already been heard by an appeals court and the Supreme Court. As part of the dissenting argument, Justice Stephen Breyer said that the majority decision sends a message to lower courts that they are not to intervene where justice went wrong. We will have a report on additional Supreme Court rulings later in the newscast. Jewish settlers set up a new camp to protest the evacuation of the Gaza Strip for the Palestinians. Minar Jibrin reports.
Dozens of Israeli far-right activists occupied a half-finished four-story Palestinian house located in the Mawasi area near the Gush Katif settlement in the Gaza Strip. Settlers also attempted to rebuild houses demolished by the army on Sunday. Settlers and far-right activists clashed with the soldiers as they were preparing to raise 12 abandoned beachfront cottages in Gush Katif. Later in the day, two mortar shells hit southern Gaza Strip settlements, damaging a building. The other one hit a hothouse but did not cause any damage and no injuries were reported. In bid to discuss ways to control weapon chaos in the Strip, Palestinian Interior Minister Nasser Youssef met earlier with Islamic Jihad leaders who complained against the frequent Israeli violations of the ceasefire, specifically the resumption of the targeted killing policy. The movement reasserted its commitment to the ceasefire and right to respond to Israeli attacks. For Free Speech Radio News from the International Middle East Media Center in Palestine, I am Manar Jibrin.
And a former Israeli soldier was convicted of killing a British activist in the Palestinian town of Rafah in 2003. The Israeli military tribunal convicted Taisir Haib of manslaughter for shooting Tom Herndel. Herndel was working with the pro-Palestinian group International Solidarity Movement when a bullet hit him in the head. He died 9 months after the shooting. In Paraguay, workers conducted a nationwide strike to oppose privatization. Matt Golden has more from Buenos Aires.
Organizations of Paraguay will march and realize intermittent blockades in the main routes of the country. The Paraguayan Congress is reactivating the study of a law project of 2002, which proposes the privatization of state companies. This project has been suspended previously due to the strong mobilizations, which caused a man to die during clashes with the police. Privatizations will cause workers to lose jobs and be replaced by multinational employees, like in other South American countries. The process of privatization foresees the partial sale of the state companies of communication, water and trains. It also grants the president, Nicanor Duarte, the authority to declare future privatizations under supervision of the Congress of other state companies. Reporting for Free Speech Radio News, this is Matt Goldin.
Workers are also striking to oppose privatization in South Africa. Rupert Cook has this story.
While the main union grouping, COSATU, has claimed an overwhelming response to the strike, South Africa's Chamber of Business contends that only 10% of workers are striking. Unions are hoping for the most concerted industrial action for more than 15 years. They vow that this will be the first in a series of strikes that will go on until February. The unions claim that they've been forced to call the strike due to the government's unwillingness to listen to their demands. Official statistics suggest a quarter of all South Africans are unemployed, while some experts estimate the unemployment rate at up to 40%. For Free Speech Radio News, Rupert Cook.
A report released today criticizes the U.S. government for prolonging the detention of material witnesses. Stephanie Zarecki reports.
The American Civil Liberties Union and Human Rights Watch released a report today detailing how prisoners at federal prisons around the country have experienced indefinite detention without charge and have endured baseless accusations of terrorist links. The Justice Department held 70 men following the terrorist attacks on September 11th, all but one of them Muslim. The men were kept under a federal law allowing the department to detain material witnesses if they might otherwise flee to avoid appearing in court. Almost half of the men detained were never brought before a grand jury, and few were ever charged with terrorist-related crimes. Today's report reveals that one-third of these men were kept for at least 2 months, while some were imprisoned for more than six. One even spent more than a year incarcerated. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Stephanie Zarecki.
And I'm Leanne Caldwell for Free Speech Radio News.
The U.S. Supreme Court came out with a split decision today in two cases concerning the display of the Ten Commandments in government places. In one case, the court ruled that Texas may exhibit the commandments at its state capitol. In the other case, the court ruled that Kentucky may not display the commandments in a courthouse. On its final day of session, the court also ruled on cases affecting internet file sharing by deciding that makers of online file sharing software can be sued for copyright infringement and that cable operators may control the internet content provided by its services. Mitch Jezerich reports from Washington.
Both religious believers and atheists gathered outside the U.S. Supreme Court this morning. Rob Schenck, president of the National Clergy Council, rejoiced to the news that the Supreme Court ruled by a 5-4 decision that the display of the Ten Commandments at the Texas State Capitol did not violate the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights concerning freedom of religion.
This decision out of Texas may be a sign that the creeping hostility towards religious expression and religious people may be slowing down or even reversing itself.
Chief Justice William Rehnquist read in the majority opinion that the monument's presence went unchallenged for 40 years and that the public was likely to interpret the display as a broader moral and historical message of cultural heritage. Ellen Johnson, president of Atheist Americans, who also waited outside for the decision, disagrees.
The Ten Commandments are not the foundation of the laws of America. English common law is. And it's just amazing that we would have something that says you do not have freedom of religion in America. The Ten Commandments say you shall have no other God before me. That violates the Bill of Rights, which says you have freedom of religion.
But in the other Ten Commandments case, the court ruled by a 5-4 decision that Kentucky's display of the Mosaic laws inside a courthouse did violate the First Amendment, saying that it attempted to advance religion. The Supreme Court, in its last day of session, also ruled on two cases concerning the Internet. In one case, the justices ruled unanimously that the powerhouse movie company MGM may sue the software company Grokster and Streamcast for their online programs that allow peer-to-peer file sharing. The court said that such software companies will have to show that the intent of their program was not created so that copyrighted files such as music and movies could be freely shared. Jason Schultz is a staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
What this means for the development is that new innovators, startups, garage inventors are going to have to be very, very careful. And it's unfortunate because innovation should be something that is free and open and experimental. But they're going to have to be very cautious under this rule whenever they make a digital media device that might play a copyrighted work. And that's going to have a serious chilling effect on all the new toys and gadgets and amazing innovations that we look forward to every year.
In another decision, the Supreme Court ruled that cable high-speed internet service is subject to telephone network requirements. Public interest groups worry that the ruling will result in limited choices for web surfing capabilities. Andrew Schwartz, the president of the Media Access Project, explains.
If a company has an offering, say a video program or something that they want to make available to people on the internet, the cable company may refuse to carry that content to its customers unless the content provider makes a separate deal with the cable company. So the cable company will have an absolute right to stop some content if it doesn't feel like carrying it for whatever reason.
As the court finishes its session, there was still no word of any justices retiring. Mitch Jezerich, Free Speech Radio News.
African human rights activists meeting in the Uganda capital of Kampala for a series of activities to mark the UN International Day in support of victims of torture have launched a campaign of shame against governments that torture their citizens. Joshua Chalimpa has a story from Kampala.
I was arrested from the university and taken to a safe house where I was kept incommunicado for 2 weeks. And I was being kept in a toilet, and I was staying in a bus toilet. My own rescue and my own blanket was warm water at night. It was a nasty experience for the 2 weeks, but I thank to God that I was able to be taken to police after 2 weeks. When I complained, I was taken into a special cell because that I was being big-headed. And in that special cell, I was always poured water every night as a punishment for 2 months. And I can tell you, I developed pneumonia. I almost died until my lawyer consulted the former Commissioner General, Mr. Tima, to bring a doctor from Ruzira, who shifted me immediately from Chigo to Ruzira. Otherwise, I was dying in a few minutes.
Frank Beruhanga was an associate professor at Makerere University, a public university in Uganda. His troubles started when, in 2001, he supported an opposition presidential candidate against incumbent President Yoweri Museveni. He lost his job after the elections, while still he ended up in Chigo prisons, a notorious prison where terror suspects are kept. Beruhanga now runs a civil society organization, the Uganda Forum Against Torture and Organized Violence, an initiative to try to stamp out torture by state agents. Dr. Moses Kizam Saz of the African Center for the Treatment and Rehabilitation of Torture Victims says they are launching a campaign to stamp out torture by African governments.
The state of torture in the continent is still very high, and high that is perpetuated by both government and other rebel activities. And that's what we are most concerned with. The individual torture is quite widespread, but we are concerned with that one which is institutionalized, that is by government and rebel activities. That is our major concern. Our aim is advocacy more so to stop torture, to tell those that are doing it that they're doing it wrongly, to tell those that they shouldn't do it, and of course try to treat and rehabilitate those who are tortured.
To achieve this, human rights activists will be parading people who have been tortured by the governments before the authorities and the media. At the launch of this approach in Kampala, torture victims such as Frank Beruhanga spoke out, and there was an immediate denial from the Commission of Uganda Prisons, Wycliffe Ngurugiye.
It is not true that Chigo is controlled by the military men. It is entirely under Uganda Prison Service.
Human rights campaigners say cases of torture on the African continent have gone up since September 11th, and that the campaign of shame will provide an alternative to the tradition of annual reports, which are rebuffed by governments as fabricated to convince Western donors to give more funding. Chigo prisons, widely known as the Ugandan Guantanamo, had hundreds of terror suspects, many of whom have been released because the government just lost interest in the cases. The launch of the campaign of shame is likely not to provide an automatic solution because the authorities will continue to deny anyway. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Joshua Charimpa reporting from Kampala, Uganda.
Democratic members of Congress held a hearing on Capitol Hill today to examine allegations of questionable billings by Halliburton subsidiary KBR for Iraq-related work. As Darby Hickey reports, witnesses testified that Halliburton managers deliberately overcharged for dining services and fuel transportation.
We are releasing a report that shows that the Pentagon's own auditors have concluded that Halliburton has overcharged by more than $1 billion, $1 billion, these are the Pentagon's own auditors, and that Halliburton can't provide substantiating receipts for another $440 million.
Senator Byron Dorgan of North Dakota convened a hearing of the Democratic Policy Committee today to examine fraud and abuse in the execution of contracts awarded to private corporations working in Iraq. The primary subject of the hearing was a subsidiary of the Halliburton Corporation, Kellogg Brown & Root, or KBR. KBR currently holds 3 contracts awarded by the Department of Defense, which have cost over $12 billion so far. One contract is for logistical support to U.S. troops in the area, while the other 2 are for reconstruction of oil infrastructure. Bonatine Greenhouse, the highest-ranking civilian in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, or USACE, who oversees the contracting process, has consistently raised concerns about the contracts awarded to Halliburton.
The abuse I observed called into question the independence of the USACE contracting process. I can unequivocally state that the abuse related to contracts awarded to KBR represents the most blatant and improper contract abuse I have witnessed during the course of my professional career.
Bonatine Greenhouse said she was told explicitly by her superiors not to participate in the hearing and threatened with retribution for speaking about the contracts to Halliburton. Senator Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey said at the hearing that he has written at least five times to Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine, the chair of the Senate Governmental Affairs Committee, asking for an official hearing to be held on the topic. Senator Byron Dorgan emphasized the need for such oversight.
This is not about Republicans and Democrats. It's about right and wrong. And it is wrong to have a blind eye to what is going on. There is abuse, overcharges, fraud. To let a few special big companies wallow like hogs in a trough and waste, misappropriate, and defraud the taxpayers of millions, tens of millions, perhaps hundreds of millions of dollars, does no service to supporting American troops.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Darby Hickey in Washington, D.C.
Iranian President-elect hardline conservative Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said he will resume Iran's nuclear program and demand respect from the international community while he promised economic relief to the Iranian people. FSRN's headlines editor Leanne Caldwell spoke with reporter Saida Jamshidi about the implications of Ahmadinejad's victory.
Ahmadinejad talked to wider groups of Iranians than Rafsanjani. Rafsanjani, the former president, addressed very high-class or rich people in Iran, but Ahmadinejad addressed wider groups like the people in villages or youth, or he addressed unemployment rate, and he promised to create more jobs for youth, and he had a better stand of addressing the problems of Iranians. Let me just explain to you very briefly that what's going on in the government. At this point, everything, I mean, all of the power is under right wings, the conservative power, and they basically have everything. They have judiciary, they have parliament, they have a president, and basically they have everything. So one of the main concerns of the reformists, the current reformist president, Mr. Khatami, is that how Ahmadinejad is going to deal with the reformist group in Iran.
Has anything he said since he's been elected given any kind of indication to the Iranian people of the path he is going to take?
He's repeating all of the slogans, basically, he had before his victory. He's saying that I'm going to fight against the corruption. I'm going to have a very compact plan for nuclear program. I'm going to fight against the poverty. I'm going to have a better relationship with the Arab neighbors. And I'm going to have a more liberation for women's rights. But basically, you always can say that what you can do, but the things you can do and how you can promote and provide your support of doing those plans is a matter of question.
We're hearing media reports about how he has pledged to resume nuclear technology.
Yes, actually, he has a press conference yesterday, and he had responded to this question from numerous reporters, most of them from the United States. His response is that he's going to follow the nuclear program, and he's going to do whatever it takes, and I'm just waiting to see how everything would work for this government. And one of the other things that really surprised me was that he hasn't received any congratulatory messages from any of the European countries.
Leanne Caldwell interviewing FSRN reporter Saida Jamshidi in Iran.
For archives of this or other newscasts or documentaries, visit our website, www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org.
Newspaper workers in Oaxaca City, Mexico remain sequestered inside their building for the 11th day in a row. People from a neighboring town, including children, were brought in by a local politician to say that they're on strike with the newspaper, yet not one of them actually works there. 31 of the 102 Noticias workers remain trapped inside of their building. One of the only local sources reporting on the issue is the local Teachers Free Radio. FSRN attempted to obtain comment from several Mexican consulates in the United States about the situation. None of them had heard about the sequestered journalist and declined to give comment. Octavio Vélez is one of the journalists blockaded inside the Noticias building in Oaxaca City. Octavio, what have the last 11 days been like for you?
We've been here for 11 days. There are 31 of us that are detained here. But despite our tiredness and fatigue, we continue to be strong. We continue together. But above all, we have the will to stay here and defend our workplace. We have the freedom of expression and the right to inform citizens. Fortunately, this aggression, despite everything else, has awakened a wave of support for Noticias in Oaxaca. Recently, there was a march, and there are people that communicate with us by telephone. There are even people that have found a way to get food and water to us.
So you have the support of the local community. Why do you think that the press has yet to widely report on the situation?
In the mass media, our kind of newspapers don't exist. Recently, the president of the Mexican Association of Editors, who is named Benjamin Fernandez Pichargo, held a forum on human rights and freedom of expression right here in Oaxaca City with the General Minister of the Republic, or PGR. And curiously, they talked about everything except for what is happening in Oaxaca. Apparently, for the president of the Mexican Association of Editors and for the PGR, nothing is happening here, even though their own organization is already investigating our case for the crime of sequestering 31 journalists. Democracy doesn't seem to exist in Mexico because it's unthinkable when in a democratic country, a local government doesn't respect a free press that's committed only to its readers and to the whole of society. Unfortunately, this illustrates that the government of Oaxaca is repressive, authoritarian, and intolerant of the press. We have to remember that out of the 102 union workers, not one of us backs this strike. They've substituted the real workers with a group of fake ones, with police and civilian clothing. They are the ones who sustain the taking of our building.
Octavio Vélez is one of 31 journalists with the Noticias newspaper sequestered inside their building since June 19. Philippine President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo has apologized for a lapse in judgment in last year's election, which has triggered calls for her resignation. Gurley Linao in Manila reports.
After 3 weeks of silence, President Gloria Arroyo finally admitted she talked with an election official while votes were being counted in hotly contested polls last year. The conversations between Arroyo and the election official, which had been illegally recorded, are in the center of an electoral fraud scandal that has triggered calls for her resignation. While admitting a lapse in judgment, Arroyo stressed she did nothing wrong. In a nationally televised speech, the president defended her calls to the election official as part of efforts to protect her votes amid the slow pace of counting then.
My intent was not to influence the outcome of the election, and it did not. I recognize that making any such call was a lapse in judgment. I am sorry. I also regret taking so long to speak before you on this matter. I take full responsibility for my actions. And to you and to all those good citizens who may have had their faith shaken by these events.
While Arroyo's apology was widely welcomed in the Philippines, it did not end calls for her resignation, as anti-government groups vowed to step up efforts to remove her from office. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Gurley Linao in Manila.
Meanwhile, Filipino activists took the call to remove President Arroyo from office to the United States. From Los Angeles, KPFK's Leilani Albano files this report.
They are now targeting on a large scale those who are unarmed protesters, no? The civilians, those who are, you know, advocating for simple issues such as corruption, our wages, employment, services, education. These activists are being killed.
That was Lisa Maza, a Filipina congresswoman and leading member of the Gabriela Women's Party. Maza had recently completed a speaking tour in New York and Los Angeles to discuss the Philippine crisis. although human rights violations have persisted in the islands since the Marcos regime. Political repression has spiked under Arroyo, she says. In the Philippine province of Samar, the situation has become increasingly oppressive.
In the Visayas, particularly in Samar, it was noted that the human rights violations there within a span of 2 months increased to 500%.
Since the elections of 2004, Arroyo had been dodging accusations of receiving gambling contributions and committing voter fraud. But new evidence points to the contrary. According to the numerous accounts in the Filipino press, taped evidence of Arroyo has surfaced. Since disclosure of so-called Gloria Gate to the wider public, Maza adds that the GMA administration has created a climate of fear not seen since the Marcos regime. Kusela Hilo is a youth organizer for Anak Bayan Los Angeles, a Filipino advocacy organization. She says that the uncovered tapes have been a major topic among Filipinos.
The escalation of the political turmoil in the Philippines is beyond anyone's imagination right now. We're hearing the news every day about what's going on with the extent of the corruption, and there seems like there is no end to the corruption.
Hilo, who attended a forum led by Maza on Friday, says that news of the tapes have prompted groups to demand for the president's resignation.
There is a call for GMA to step down. Probably the one that really pushed it over the edge was uncovering these tapes of her talking to a commissioner from COMELEC, and that exposing the election fraud that people have been claiming ever since the 2004 election started.
Gabriela has joined protesters in the Philippines on Friday to demand Arroyo's ouster. As a result of their overt opposition to the president, 11 women, including Gabriela members, have been murdered this year alone. In all, 34 activists have been killed in 2005. Despite the killings, Gabriela does not plan to take things lying down. Maza is organizing in the United States and elsewhere to end the violence in her country. She admonishes activists everywhere not to give up on the Philippines.
It is time that we really rise up as a people. I think that the international community, especially the Filipinos who are, you know, in America, and should understand this deeply, that there is hope in our country, and we can go to the path of real progress and development for our country.
The response by the Philippine government to the allegations have so far been elusive. Patricia Paez is media spokeswoman for the Philippine Embassy in New York. When asked about the rising sentiment against President Arroyo, she commented,
"Well, I cannot categorically make an estimate because we are a population of 87 million Filipinos. So whether it is growing, what percentage of the population share that view or sentiment, I cannot gauge."
At the same time, she says that all forms of dissent are welcome in the Philippines. For FSRN, this is Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. Our newscast is produced at Pacifica Stations WBAI in New York, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFK in Los Angeles. The newscast is produced by Monica Lopez and Simba Russo. Our headlines editor is Leanne Caldwell. Mitch Jezerich is our Washington editor. Our technical production team is Jade Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone, McMillan, and Eric Klein. For archives of this or other newscasts or documentaries, please visit our website at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado.